friendship is the light of day. Can we trust you on that? Usually, as politicians, we are blamed for making all the promises and implementing a few. Can we trust the officials that they'll do better than us politicians?
That's a sure case. With all the persons, all the work has been done, Chairperson. Only those minor issues that Treasury raised and that need to be addressed. Once it's addressed them, I'm sure those will be addressed during this month. And then we will the legislation will be proclaimed during February. And we have discussed it with Mr. Lisello, the legal advisor, the chief director in the legal section. And Mr. Sango, we've agreed. And anyway, the minister has emphasized that the legislation has to be implemented during the course of this first 3 months.
Mr. Pakadi, do we have the money for it? Where in the budget have we provided for it? I assume the new budget kicks in on the 1st of April. Or we hear it from the Minister of Finance on the 11th.
Yes, Chair. Well, there has been significant increases in the provincial budgets over the last few years. Obviously, these days and times require that we reprioritize, but there's going to be progressive implementation of all these new pieces of legislation. But I'm sure there will be adequate space in the provincial budget, Chair, for the implementation of the Older Persons Act. In our interactions, in fact, Zane should know this, when we were having our joint bidding processes, there wasn't really much concern in this area, Chair, in terms of inadequate funding. My understanding, therefore, is that there will be money.
Do prioritization given the belt tightening times that are coming, not compromise the quality of service to the most vulnerable. We should rather be cutting out on manager's salaries rather than I'm not sure how Zane Dengo is looking at me when I say this. Rather than ending up with old people on the streets because old age homes have to close because we don't have the money to sustain them, because those people can really be vulnerable, especially in their twilight ages. But I have faith in the department that you have the interest of our constituents, our potential voters at heart, especially in this difficult month. All right. Any other questions from colleagues, older persons? Yes, Ms. Ngama?
I don't know how much of a question this is, but I would like to alert the department to a new phenomenon, and that is the plight of aging domestic employees in the cities. Now, once upon a time, elderly employees used to return to the area they came from, and I was rather shocked to discover I offered my employee permanent stay on our premises when I discovered he asked for money to build a house in an informal settlement. And I then inquired about her original home, and she explained how totally dislocated they are in the current economic environment from the areas of origin. They've been in the cities for 45, 50 years. They are now I made more inquiries. There are more and more who are reaching pensionable age. They're getting their pension, and they have nowhere to go other than an informal settlement in which they can find room to build a house. So I just wanted to alert the department whether it's ever done any research, because it is a fairly new phenomenon now that's developed in the last 10 years or so. Thank you.
Coming from Gauteng, I can assure you that it's a common phenomenon, that a lot of older people who retire from the northern suburbs of Joburg and similar areas, who all along have been living in the backyards of the employers. When they retire, they find themselves having to either apply for an RDP house or to build something, find the place in the informal settlement. It's a very common phenomenon. So this perception, this policy of the department that the ideal thing is to arrange or to focus on people being cared for within their community, is what Ms. Ma's comment relates to, that it's an assumption that may not be always applicable. And that, I think, is a direct motivation to saying, because even if she builds a place in the informal settlement, there'll come a time where her age prevents her from being able to live on her own there. So at some point she will need to go to a retirement village or something. So we can't underestimate the importance of sustaining some of these villages, even if it means prioritizing those that are too old to live on their own. I know that my neighbors, when I was staying in a flat in Joburg, the wife passed on whilst they were still staying in the flat, and the husband afterwards was at a loss. But the father was a professor in medicine at that, but he never wanted to go and live with the father. He was comfortable living in the flat until he passed on. So it does seem possible for some older people to live until the very last on their own. So it's not a given that everybody needs an old age home to retire to, but I'm sure there are many who will find it impossible to live out in the community. Do you want to comment on this?
Chairperson, I do. It is the policy of the department that we promote independent living for older persons, but that it is three levels, that if the person is not able to be independent, we do the support services. But those who cannot both be independent or get the support services to be able to live within the community, that's where this continuum care, where the old age homes or that type of care is provided. The research that we are undertaking now is going to inform us as to say how many of these people do we have, and so that when we put in place the structures or the services, we will be informed by the population, the accessibility of those older persons to existing services, so that when we put up the services, these are in line with the needs and the population. Because when you look at the current statistics, you find that there are more old age homes in certain areas, but when you look at their population, are not as many as maybe in areas like Eastern Cape and KZN or Limpopo, and the services there are minimal. So the research that is being undertaken and the audit is going to inform us of the type of services that we have, their quality. We've got an architectural investigation also going on to check the quality of buildings that the older people are housed, as well as the quality of life that those people are receiving in those centers. So as soon as this research has been finalized, we will be able to come back to say, in this particular community, this is needed, and how are these people going to access the services, with a number of departments that are supposed to deliver the act in a collaborated manner. We would be able to say to a particular department, when they bring us their own implementation plan of the act, and their priorities, it will then be indicated where they need to focus, whether in building areas or building old age homes, whatever their needs would be. Thank you, Chairperson.
And just tell us, has this been resolved? Last year we were told that the policy is that you only finance the operational cost. You don't actually finance infrastructure development. And I'm not even sure whether you finance the maintenance cost in relation to infrastructure. Can you just tell us what is your subsidy policy? What do you pay for and what do you not pay for? Because we can't even talk about state-owned facilities because in the broader scale of things, they are insignificant. I mean, one per province, and in some provinces, zero. I mean, the state is contributing very little in so far as state-owned are concerned. So your real impact area is subsidization. Now, do you provide seed funding for the actual establishment of old age homes, privately owned old age homes? I know in the past there's been issues around ownership where some old age homes would say, even though we were funded by government, this is private property and we're at liberty to sell it to a bidder. So there were those kind of issues. I can't remember how we dealt with that in the Act. But yeah, I mean, can you respond?
It's true, Chairperson, that we find the operational cost, but as the Act indicates in the first paragraph of the objects of the Act, it indicates that this Act, for it to address the plight of older persons, it has to be implemented in an integrated manner. That is why it is very important that all of the government departments pull their resources together. Hence, that structure that's going to be responsible for ensuring that the services of the older persons address their plight, it would then be that also there's an international obligation that also binds this country to say older persons need to be involved in whatever they have to be provided for. So we're hopeful that once the Act is in place, it's going to be compulsory for all government departments to come together. If we feel this is the need is an old age home and it's the responsibility of Public Works, we need to find out from them how soon, what budget do they have, what priorities do they have in place, so that they are able to provide what would be perceived as a need. So it won't only be, the Act does not only put the blame or the emphasis on one government department or at a national department. We need to work collaboratively up to the local level where people
are you enjoying that collaboration currently? Are they coming to the party?
So far they've come to the party, but they haven't committed in terms of resources to say how much are they putting in place. But we have managed to form that coordinated structure. It's very difficult to get other government departments. So we're now looking at having either these people appointed maybe by the minister and they have a certain responsibility where they account. Because for now we only have government departments representative. They have their focal person in that structure. But the role and the status of those people is not influencing that department to be able to provide the resources for the commitment that the Act says this is your role. So those are some of the things that make it difficult for now for this Treasury to finalize that aspect of the regulations to say how are we going to ensure that everybody comes to the party and they not only do it verbally but they also commit resources, commit individuals to say this will be your responsibility and this is how you achieve it. Your plan, your MTAF plan must also influence to say for this year is this what you're going to achieve and so on. So those are some of the things that make it difficult for the Act to start, but we hope that by April those who have already made commitments and the priorities would be to ensure that there definitely is a shift from institutional care to community-based care services. And those provinces that have already existing
community-based care services. We want to strengthen what they have in terms of what is it that they're going to provide, subsidies or resources, all those things. So there's no way that one government department can pull and stay and not play their role efficiently. It will depend, as Mr. Kokaga puts it, that this is a year where we may not be having enough funds, but each government department needs to prioritize their needs to the vulnerable persons.
Mr. Denver, do you want to add something?
Maybe not add in a way that extends the approach, but I think there's a question that's been raised by the minister.
Thanks. What's emerging out of this is the biggest strategic discussion that we need to have. I understand that we, as a department, take the lead from what the sort of the mainstream thinking around home and community-based care, which is a global issue. But you know, so the move from the move to deinstitutionalize has been something that's, you know, taking place over the last 15 to 20 years. Some would argue it's also part of the privatizing of social services. We need to have a debate on this and actually look at that strategy in the context where communities and homes are under stress. And when communities and homes are under stress, we still pursue the same strategy. And I think that is a very strategic issue that we need to really confront. One looks at the Swedish example. They've deinstitutionalized after having a period of 100 years of institutions. We haven't invested in those institutions, but we deinstitutionalized it. So we understand best practice, but we also need to look at how that impacts on our context at the local level. So I think we need to find the space to look at that. And then that also links to the issue of how we fund infrastructure costs. Social infrastructure is one of the key issues that the city at province level have discussed. And by social infrastructure, we really mean how do we care for older people, how do we care for children. Besides the operational social infrastructure costs, like the provision under which social workers work, but the actual service delivery component of that. We have embarked on a bid for social infrastructure, but all indications are that that may not be funded. And there's a number of policy issues that we need to look at that. It also looks at ECD sites, for example, where Treasury would say there's no policy on the state owning or investing in ECD sites. These are private areas. We can only subsidize services. Because the concern is who's going to take care of those. That infrastructure as we build it, the maintenance and management costs. So there's a big issue around social infrastructure ownership and management, which is a policy issue that we need to have government-wide. And social development can lead on that debate, but we'll also need the assistance of the portfolio committee on those kind of issues.
Can I say that the whole issue of capacity to deliver services and looking at the collaborative relationship between government and civil society, it's a matter that we're going to need to come back to. Because the figures that are here suggest that the bulk of the services are being provided by civil society. And we have constantly heard NGOs complaining that their funding is getting cut, that government is not listening to them, that they're being sidelined, and all those issues. I don't think that, whether it's perception or fact, we can afford to have civil society feeling uncomfortable in their relationship with the department, because if they are providing the bulk of our services, if they collapse, then the whole thing collapses. So we're going to need to come back to this issue. I wanted to step off older persons and move on to disability. Unless somebody else wanted to raise
a burning question. All right. Okay. So in rounding off this discussion, you know, like all the other areas, we have consistently said as the portfolio committee that the business of the National Department is not just to write policies and legislation and then throw it at provinces and then go and have a cup of coffee. That actually should be the smallest part of your work. The biggest part of your work is to go out there and work with the provinces, because that's where you'd be able to assess whether the laws were written actually make sense or not. I mean, we're sitting here in Cape Town, we're not down there on the ground to have a feel of how in reality these things work. And we want your feedback. Now, if we are all at a loss as to what's happening there on the ground, then we are all doomed. We as the portfolio committee tried to request that we be given permission to go and do oversight in each province. We had a program that was approved last year, and then we were told that we can't go. So unfortunately, committees do not have the final say about their own program, which can be very frustrating. But nevertheless, we do, however, expect the department to actually